Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the WOW Review. WOW is sponsored by the Wild Los Angeles Times, with an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The WOW Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the WOW Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The WOW Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on bird flu epidemic when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, on the richest one-half of 1% of our population with a top tax rate of only 7%. Well, today, of course, the fears of the early opponents of that tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%. And by the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th in order to earn enough money to satisfy the tax man at all levels. This year, the average American family had to work all the way through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. So what does that make us? This income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments, and they violate eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. And the income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And that's why I contend that you ought to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? If you'd like more information about tax and status, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and then send an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this article in the October 31st, 2005 Newsweek magazine as it relates to bird flu. Pretty comprehensive story. I pointed out that this is a propaganda blitz. I'm not quite sure how this propaganda blitz is going to work out, but this isn't a news report. This is a prophecy in the making. Our government officials and our news media aren't telling us this is what happened past tense. They're telling us this is what's going to happen future tense, whether we like it or not. It was like the run-up to the Iraq war. They came out and sold us that war. We bought it, and they're out here selling us this avian bird flu, and I suspect that America will buy it. I'm not so sure that I want to buy into the program. I'm not going to buy in to the antiviral drugs. I'm not going to buy into the vaccines. I'm going to use the time-honored 4,000-year-old natural remedies, and primarily the remedy we call silver. Let me tell you a little something about the silver. I've mentioned it a couple of times. I won't keep you dangling here like Burma Shave forever. Here's an article called "Silver Kills Viruses, Study Finds," taken from the Free Market News. In a groundbreaking study, the Journal of Nanotechnology has published a study that found silver nanoparticles kills HIV-1 and is likely to kill virtually any other virus. The study, which was conducted by the University of Texas and Mexico University, is the first medical study to ever explore the benefits of silver nanoparticles, according to Fisorg. Now, during the study, researchers used three different methods of limiting the size of the silver nanoparticles by using capping agents. The capping agents were foamy carbon poly-PVP and bovine serum albumin, BSA. The particles ranged in size from 1 to 10 nanometers, depending on the method of capping. After incubating the HIV-1 virus at 37 degrees Celsius, the silver particles killed 100% of the virus within 3 hours for all three methods. The scientists believe that the silver particles bonded through glycoprotein knobs on the virus with spacing of about 22 nanometers in length. While further research is needed, researchers are optimistic that nanological silver may be the silver bullet to kill viruses. The researchers in the study said that they had already begun experiments using silver nanoparticles to kill what is known as the superbug. That's called methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, already used as a topical antibiotic in the medical industry. Silver may now come under consideration as an alternative to drugs when it comes to fighting previously untreatable viruses, such as the Tamiflu-resistant avian flu virus. There's the scientific story. In a newsletter called the Mogambo Guru Report put out by Kitco, just go to Kitco, K-I-T-C-O.com, and then plug in to /ind.dottie/printer-friendly, October 26, 2005. You're looking for the Mogambo Guru Report on the Kitco webpage. And here's what Mogambo reported. And the reason I'm so particularly strident is that silver is suddenly even more grossly underpriced. And I say this surprising thing because the Journal of Nanotechnology has just published a medical study that has been described as groundbreaking, wherein they report that silver nanoparticles of silver kill the HIV-1 virus, and thus, if true, is a cure for AIDS. A freaking cure for AIDS? Of course, the authors are not suggesting that, nor is anybody with any sense of responsibility or common sense even suggesting it. But you know that the Mogambo has no such scruples and goes to the extreme every time, with or without any factual basis at all. And not only that, but, and you can tell by the way I am happily jumping around in childish glee, that this is more good news. The authors furthermore conclude that silver will almost certainly kill all other viruses too, which is what the colloidal silver people have been saying for years. Although without the techniques of nanotechnology to prepare the silver, their results were poor. But can you imagine the price of silver if it really is, thanks to nanotechnology, a new silver bullet, medicine that is literally silver, that can instantly kill all bacteria, viruses, molds, fungi, and cooties in your body and curing you 100% of everything with a single dose? It would be freaking priceless. And you can buy pure silver right now for less than $8 an ounce. This seems odd, considering that if this works out even fractionally, as well as I think it can, all 6 billion people on this planet are going to want medicinal silver for themselves and their animals, as well as their families. And that's a lot of silver, dude. And the price of silver will get so high that people in the future will look back and marvel among themselves, saying, golly, the Mogambo was right for a change. The study was conducted by a collaboration between the University of Texas and Mexico University and is, so it is reported, the first medical study to ever explore the benefits of silver nanoparticles. They are already beginning to look excitedly, I'll bet it, using silver nanoparticles to kill methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which is popularly known as superbug because it is so resistant to all antibacterial drugs. And if this silver thing is lethal to all viruses, then the dreaded avian flu becomes just one more pesky virus, a footnote in history. All I can say, knowing as little factual information as I do, but augmented with an overactive imagination and endless greed, and that handily fills in all the gaps, is wow. And you can still buy the stuff for less than $8 an ounce. Again, wow. But trust me when I say that the pharmaceutical companies are going to want to, as Barney Fife once remarked to Sheriff Andy Taylor, nip this silver thing in the bud, because you can look it up in any book you want to. But they all recommend the same thing. Bud nipping. Now that's what Mogambo had to say. Now listen, the pharmaceutical companies make a lot of money on these vaccines, and they make a lot of money on this Tamiflu. In fact, I saw the other day on the internet, this Tamiflu is selling for 5 times. It's illegal, of course, to buy it that way, but it's selling for 5 times what it sells for in the drugstore because of its short supply. It's only made by Roche over in Switzerland. And they've got everybody convinced now that they need it. I mean, after all, we've got this super virus coming. We've got this bird flu coming. Now, let's not discount it, because these super scientists, these crazy maniacs, these world-class elitists have in mind to reduce the Earth's population. I don't doubt for a minute but what they've already got this virus. Now, listen to the rest of the story in Newsweek, and I'll tell you why I think that they've already got it. The best weapon against H5N1 would be a vaccine. At least two have been developed, one in the United States and one in Hungary, and they are reportedly showing promise in tests. But here's the catch-22 in vaccine production. The virus now in circulation, which infects humans only by way of birds, is not the one we have to worry about. It will have to mutate to cause a human pandemic, and the existing vaccine may or may not be completely effective against this new strain. It presumably would offer at least some protection, but the standard vaccine now being given for this year's seasonal flu variety offers no protection at all against H5 viruses. Let me pause here for a moment for my famous Gordon editorial comment. Notice the words here. It says it may or may not be completely effective against the new strain. Well, now, it would seem like to me that if I went in and I got a vaccine, a guy says, hey, I'm going to shoot you up with this vaccine, my first question would be, what's it going to do? It's going to protect you from this virus. It's going to protect you from this disease. Oh, okay. Now, I might want to buy something like that. You know, if I walked in and said, hey, listen, I'll give you this magic potion over here, and this is going to protect you from AIDS. You take this shot and you won't get AIDS. If you don't take this shot, you're going to get AIDS. But that's not the way of medicine works. The world of medicine works like this. You come in and the doctor says, you take this shot, and it may or may not prevent this disease. And that's what they just told you right there. It may offer you some protection. All right, well, what is some protection? Does that mean that I'll only get half sick? I'll only get three-quarters sick? I'll only get 25% sick? And how do you know that, doc? What tests have you run? It's a brand new vaccine. It's never been tested yet. How in the hell can this guy make any kind of statement whatsoever concerning the efficacy of his product? That's just more of this supercilious nonsense that comes out of the medical community and extrapolated by the media nuts that write these kind of crazy stories. Now, let me tell you something about the silver over here. Old Magambo said it may or may not be effective, this old technology, this old silver, colloidal silver. And colloidal silver has been around for at least 150 years. The old timers did this. You take a cow and you milk her. No refrigeration. Put a silver dollar in the milk bucket and let it sit out at room temperature. And it'll keep it from going sour for about 3 days. Now, if you don't put that in there, the milk will go sour in about 2 days, depending upon the temperature. So here's what happens. The bacteria multiplies every 20 minutes. The bacteria divides and multiplies. So you got one bacteria, it multiplies to 2, 2 to 4, 4 to 8, 16, 32, 64. By the time it reaches 200,000 bacteria per cubic centimeter, the milk's sour. That's how simple it is. So by refrigerating the milk, what you do, the cold slows the division down. They don't reproduce every 20 minutes like they do at room temperature. They reproduce, but they reproduce every hour or two or three. So the milk, instead of going sour in 48 hours, goes sour in 7 or 8 days. That's the difference. Pasteurization helps a great deal. If you pasteurize this milk, you kill all the bacteria that you can in it. You got less bacteria to start from. Now, normal cow's milk, when it comes out of the cow, has about 10,000 bacteria per cubic centimeter. It doesn't take long to go from 10,000 to 20,000 to 40,000 to 80,000 to 160,000 to 320,000. I mean, you set that stuff out at room temperature and it'll go sour in a day. That's why refrigeration is so good, and that's why pasteurization lengthens the shelf life of the milk. Nobody pasteurizes milk because they give a rat's ass about your health. We pasteurize the milk so that it gives it a longer shelf life. It has to do with economics, not health, boys and girls. So it's time to wake up and smell the coffee. Now, that's number one. Now, number two here, this H5N1 virus over here is a cash cow for the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, leaving aside the lethality of it, whether or not it's the world's next Spanish flu or bubonic plague or the next plague that's being ushered in on planet Earth by way of God Almighty himself, it's a cash cow for pharmaceuticals, and they're going to milk it. And the last thing that they're going to sit still for is a bunch of clowns coming in here with a cheap, inexpensive, 100% successful remedy for viruses called silver. We're not going to allow that. That's preposterous on its face. You got a multi-billion dollar industry going on here, and you want a bunch of cowboys from Colorado coming in here with colloidal silver and screwing it up? No. What they'll do is they'll come out with some kind of a law against silver, claiming that it kills people, harms people, and they'll put you in jail if they catch you using it. But until that time comes, let me tell you where you can get these. First of all, you can make this silver yourself. All that it requires is that you put a silver dollar or any silver bullion coin into water and let it sit there. Let it sit there for 2 or 3 weeks. And the water will leach out these nanoparticles, little tiny flecks of silver off of the silver coin, off of the silver ingot. You can wear silver. Just put on a silver bracelet and wear it. Women don't like it because it gives a black, around the band, it turns your skin black. That's the silver. Those are the little nanoparticles we're talking about. And your body will absorb those through your skin. You could get rid of your stainless steel flatware and start drinking out of silver cups and eating off of silver spoons, knives, and forks. Now, I don't know where to send for one of these, but I imagine if you got on a Google search and looked up colloidal silver, you'll probably find some companies on there that make an electrical device. And we've got one or two of them here at the farm, and I don't use them. I don't make it. I just watch Dirk do it. But here's the way this thing works. It works off of batteries, and it sends an electrical charge through the water, it's got an alligator clip on it. And you take your silver dollar and you hook this alligator clip on it. And then you drop it into this glass. And the electricity that goes through the cup, goes through this wire to the silver coin, and then through the silver coin and then up the other side, causes these little nanoparticles, they call them. These are just microscopic particles. In fact, you can actually watch them. It's kind of like watching Alka-Seltzer dissolve in a glass. And you can actually watch the silver dollar dissolve in the glass by passing a 9-volt electrical charge through it. You can see the particles coming off, turns the water milky right in front of your eyeballs. And I think we paid $35 for one of those, $35. Now, most Americans, when they get the flu, they get sick of some kind, they run to the doctor and say, give me a shot of penicillin, give me a shot of antibiotics. Listen, antibiotics do not kill, they do not harm, they do not do anything to viruses. Common, everyday garden variety knowledge. Furthermore, the antibiotics are bad for your body because someday you may actually have pneumonia and you may need a shot of penicillin to kill the pneumonia. And your body will be, you know, it's kind of like getting an alcoholic, you know, he keeps drinking and drinking, your body becomes immune to it. I've seen people that can sit there and drink 10 or 15 highballs in one evening. Why, my God, if I drank 15 highballs, I'd be dead. And so would most other people. But, you know, people develop a tolerance for things. And most Americans have a high tolerance for antibiotics, which don't do anything against viruses anyway. Now, this flu is a virus, not a bacteria. And the only thing that I know of that kills these viruses is silver. And it's cheap and inexpensive. You don't need the $35 machine. You can do the same thing by just dropping it. It just takes 3-4 weeks for the silver to leach out of the silver dollar in the water. Just take a pint of water and put a silver dollar in it, wait 3 or 4 weeks, and you'll have colloidal silver. Drink it. Drink it. And that's the way you do that, or wear it. A better way to do it is just wear a silver necklace or a silver bracelet or a silver ring, something like that, and it'll do the same thing. And your body will have that silver floating around in it, and when these little viruses show up, it'll kill them. Now, that's the story on that. Now, remember, the best weapon against this H5N1 would be a vaccine. Vaccine. What the hell do you need a vaccine for? We already saw that the vaccines don't save anybody. They're only effective 28% of the time, if then, and maybe you won't get the disease as bad as. I already read that to you. This whole story of vaccines and pharmaceuticals is buying into mouse milk and snake venom. It's just garbage. You know, makes people feel good. In fact, they call that when they give you one of these placebos. That's what that stuff amounts to, as a placebo. And it actually cures some people. There's people that have had chronic disease, and they put them into a test, and the guy actually gets better. He's actually taking the sugar pill, but he thinks he's getting the real drug, and he actually gets better. We call that psychosomatic illness. People, you know, that they actually believe that it's helping them, and it probably does. Makes them feel good. So I wouldn't want to take your blanket away from you, Charlie Brown, but I would say this. I think you're wasting your money. And there is a proven methodology that's been around for thousands of years. You know, people have been using silver for a long time for medicinal purposes. The fact that modern medical science or some university suddenly came upon this marvelous new nanoparticle of silver over here. Okay, it's been around for a long time. But, you know, quarantine didn't come from modern medicine. Quarantine came from God through Moses at Mount Sinai in the Mosaic Law. That's where quarantine came from. And the idea that you should wear a mask over your mouth, that doesn't come from modern medicine, boys and girls. That came from Moses at Mount Sinai. Now, these medical guys, you know, they like to claim that they're doing all these great and wonderful things. And modern medicine has done some marvelous things, no doubt about it. But it's overblown. And with this pandemic coming up, which I would submit to you, they've already got this virus. I find it hard to believe that somebody hasn't already taken this H5N1 virus. And they've already experimented with it in the laboratory, and they've got it to mutate so that it'll spread from human to human. Imagine the value of that as a biological weapon against the Chinese or the Russians or some terrorist. Imagine if that falls into the hands of the terrorists. Can you imagine that jerk over there in Iraq if he got hold of a weapon like that? Well, I've forgotten how to pronounce his name now, but he's the number one honcho in Iraq. He's over there killing everybody he can get his hands on, cutting their heads off when he gets hold of them. Now, I find it hard to believe that our government, after having developed atomic and hydrogen weapons and all kinds of other weapons of biologic and chemical weapons like smallpox and anthrax, haven't already figured out that they could go out here and get the Spanish flu and bring it in here and use it as a biological weapon. And listen to the tone of voice that all of these stories carry. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We're just waiting for it to mutate. Well, what if it never mutated? And there's probably millions of viruses out there that never did mutate. Never posed a problem to us. These guys are practically promising us that this thing is going to mutate and that it's going to kill millions of people. All right, so tuck it away in your hearts. Now, the final line of defense against a pandemic is called the hospital, where more than 2 million Americans, according to a study by the Trust for Americans Health, might need treatment. Their points of entry, in many cases, will be the emergency rooms that would have trouble coping with even a bad regular flu season, warns Dr. Rick Blum. He's the president of the American College of Emergency Physicians. And he says, we have pumped billions of dollars into preparedness since 9/11. But virtually none of that has gone to the one place where we know 80% of patients will go first, and that's the emergency room. Many of them will probably be extremely sick with respiratory and multiple organ failure and in need of intensive care. They would need ventilators to help them breathe. But there are only 100,000 ventilators in the United States. And 3/4 of those ventilators are already in use on any given day. So Levitt fears that most localities simply haven't planned for the surge in medical admissions resulting from a pandemic. All right, so let's just pause here for a minute. Let's suppose you get sick. And you say, well, gosh, I'm sick. Maybe I've got this bird flu. You run down to the emergency room where 10,000 other people are standing in line because they've got the same symptoms that you do. I mean, that's where people were in 1918. And Russell Harvey told me there was no need to go to the hospital. There wasn't anything the hospital could do for you. There was no cure for the disease anyway. You could call the doctor, but the doctor couldn't do anything for you. And he'd just tell you, I can't do anything for you. If you've got the flu, you know, bed rest and take some honey and lemon juice. I mean, you know, the common things that people do for a cold, use a mustard plaster, you know, 55 other things. Nothing's going to solve your problem. Medical science is the poorest source to go to cure a disease. Medical science can't cure any diseases. All they can do is treat them. They're not offering you a cure for this flu. They're offering you a treatment until you get over it, until your immune system throws it off. Well, if that's the case, why spend your money? Might as well work on your immune system today and work with that which we do know works, colloidal silver, or as they call it now. I guess the science is going to be calling it silver nanoparticles. And it's experimental, so by the time that these silver nanoparticles get out there in any quantity, you'll be dead. So you might as well work with what you got, and that's called colloidal silver. Most of you people out there probably have a few silver coins. Take the silver coin and throw it into a pint of water. If you really want to get sophisticated, spend $35 and get one of those little thingies. You can make one yourself out of 9-volt batteries. One of the first things I saw was a little diagram thing. I'm not much of an electrician, but I can tell you that you can make one out of just a little 9-volt battery, and you hook it up to a thingy and put a couple of wires on it with some alligator clips and stick it onto two sides of your silver dollar and stick it down in the water, and you can watch it do it right there. We got a little black box to put our thingies in with wires that come out of them with the alligator clips. That's what you get for $35. And let me give you a reminder here before we go any further. At the halfway point, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet on our website by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, health, history, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. Just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, so Levitt's department will work to improve their plans. There's no question that the administration is taking the threat of avian flu seriously, even though it's still hypothetical at this point. Epidemiologists agree that a flu pandemic is inevitable sooner or later, although there's no way to predict if H5N1 will be the germ to cause that epidemic. White House aides say President George Bush himself raised the question of preparedness after reading historian John Berry's definitive account of the 1918 pandemic. One last observation. You know, it was the idea of our Constitution founding fathers that government should stay out of everything except those limited enterprises that were constitutionally directed toward our federal government. Now our federal government is engaged in health care, health issues. There was a hurricane, Wilma, just hit Miami, and the people down there in Miami are just ranting and raving and raising hell because the government isn't down there passing out ice and water fast enough. What in the hell business has the government got down there doing passing out ice and water? And why aren't those people, why don't they stockpile their own? And when the electricity goes off, doesn't that happen every time there's a hurricane? I mean, have Americans become so damn dumb and so incompetent that they can't stock up a week, 2 weeks, 5 weeks in advance? You know, the average American today has a 3-day supply of food in his refrigerator. The average today, 3 days. When I was a kid back in 1940, we had 1 year, a 1 year food supply in everybody's house. For crying out loud. I mean, Americans have gotten to the point. I saw it the other day, and this woman said, we did everything that they told us to do. We had a 3-day supply. We didn't know it was going to last more than 3 days. For crying out loud. How in the hell does anybody know how long the power is going to be off when a hurricane comes through? Going to blame George Bush because the power is off for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks? How in the hell did he know the power was going to be off in Miami for longer than 72 hours? Man, come on, kids. I say it's time for us to grow up and get real smell of coffee and act like we're adults, for crying out loud. Anyway, what's the next item over here? Look at this. Foreign Affairs. You ever heard of Foreign Affairs magazine? Well, Foreign Affairs magazine is put out by none other than the CFR. That's the Council on Foreign Relations, one of these New World Order global think tank operations. Things, an organization that Tom Brokaw belongs to, and all the news journalists, you know, anybody who's anybody, the ambassadors, you know, to various countries. It's a think tank on foreign relations, and they put out a paper. It's called the Foreign Affairs magazine. And you can get this article. It's from www.foreignaffairs.org. That's where we go. It's entitled The Next Pandemic. Now, this is one of those insider outfits like the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers. This is the CFR. This is the third group. CFR, Bilderbergers, and the Trilateral Commission. Well, since it first emerged in 1997, avian influenza has become deadlier and more resilient. It has infected 100 people and killed 59 of them. If the virus becomes capable of human-to-human transmission and retains its extraordinary potency, humanity could face a pandemic unlike any ever witnessed. Now, scientists have long forecast the appearance of an influenza virus capable of infecting 40% of the world's human population and killing unimaginable numbers. Recently, a new strain called H5N1 avian influenza has shown all of the earmarks of becoming that disease. Until now, it has largely been confined to certain bird species, but that may be changing. The havoc such a disease could wreak is commonly compared to the devastation of the 1918-19 Spanish flu, which killed 50 million people in 18 months. But avian flu is far more dangerous. It kills 100% of the domesticated chickens it infects. And among humans, the disease is also lethal. As of May 1st, about 109 people were known to have contracted it. It killed 54%, although this statistic does not include any milder cases that may have gone unreported. Since it first appeared in southern China in 1997, the virus has mutated, becoming hardier and deadlier and killing a wider range of species. According to the March 2005 National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medical Flu report, current ongoing epidemic of H5N1 avian influenza in Asia is unprecedented in its scale, in its spread, and in the economic losses that it has caused. In short, doom may loom, but note the may. If the relentlessly evolving virus becomes capable of human-to-human transmission, or if it develops a power of contagion typical of human influenzas, and maintains its extraordinary virulence, humanity could well face a pandemic unlike any ever witnessed, or nothing at all could happen. Scientists cannot predict with certainty what this H5N1 influenza will do. Evolution does not function on a knowable timetable, and influenza is one of the sloppiest, most mutation-prone pathogens in nature's storehouse. God, I can't contain myself. Nature's storehouse? Who in the hell is this nature, anyway? Is this nature someone I can write a letter to or pray to? Well, this nature they're talking about here is God Almighty himself. And this God, remember, said the creation was completed on the sixth day. So when he completed creation, this avian virus that we're talking about today was already created. Now, time and again in the scripture, we find that this God over here uses words and terms, you know, like hate, love, fury. I'll tell you a couple of them here because the Christians, you know, they're always talking about love. Well, God has some things to say. For instance, in Matthew 24, verse 22, he said, there's coming a time when no flesh would be left alive. And I would submit to you boys and girls that since they have already unleashed this one virus called AIDS, and if they unleash another virus like this bird flu, and then what have they got up their sleeves after they get through with those two? I think that when the Messiah warned us, he said, you know, these crazy lunatics out here, when they get to running out here at full course, when you've got wars and rumors of wars, take a look at these wars running around here. We've killed more people in the 20th century than all the other wars in history combined, just the 20th century. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of people were killed. Do you know that just in the aftermath of the Chinese Civil War in 1949, from 1949 to 1957, in 8 years, the Chinese communists killed 47 million of their own people. Hell, that was more people than died in World War II. And they killed those people in 8 years out of their own midst. No, that's a bloody century, that 20th century. And it didn't come anywhere near close to resolving the population increase in the world. The wars haven't done anything to slow down population. Well, I shouldn't say anything. Obviously, they've slowed it down a few percentage points, but it hasn't solved the problem. When I was a kid, there were about 2.5 billion people on planet Earth, 1940. Hell, back in 1915, when this avian flu, this thing they call the Spanish flu, there was only 120 million in the United States. Today, there's 300 million. Our population has doubled, more than doubled, since 1918, in less than 100 years. And it's projected to double again over the next 30 or 40. Now, these guys have come up with a plan, and their plan is that they want to reduce the population, and they're going to get after it in a serious way. And so in the Bible, we see some prophecies like Matthew 24:22. Revelation 6, verses 3 and 4 talks about war. Revelation 6, verses 5 and 6 talks about famine. Revelation 6, verses 7, 8, and 9 talks about death and hell, this pale horse, taking one-fourth of humanity. That's 1.5 billion people. That's why I thought this week I'd share with you this thing called avian flu. I mean, these guys seem to be pretty damn serious about this. I saw another article, news piece came across my desk this week. The British think that 700,000 people are going to die from this avian flu in Great Britain. So they're preparing for 700,000 dead. They're getting some temporary morgues sorted out with body bags and all the paraphernalia that goes with it. So boys and girls, it's time for us to wake up and smell the coffee. These guys are serious players in the game. And I would submit to you that we're going to have to be just as serious as these lunatics and these maniacs if we're going to survive this. Now, the God of the Bible says in Ezekiel 33:11 that it takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked. Now, there was a bunch of people died here in the United States in Hurricane Katrina, and you can rest assured that God said, I don't take any pleasure in the death of the wicked. But when that hurricane was on its way, I'm sure that there was a bunch of people out there praying to Jesus and saying, please take this hurricane away, and he didn't do that. Now, over in Pakistan, there was a big earthquake here a couple weeks ago. You probably remember, killed 54,000 people. That's not the only earthquake that's ever occurred, and it's not the only earthquake that's ever going to occur, and thousands of people die when these earthquakes occur. Now, you'd think that these people, when this earthquake occurred, started praying. They were praying to Allah. They were praying to Buddha. They were praying to Jesus. Now, these gods are not listening, or they cannot hear you. There's something wrong here in the world of religion, boys and girls, because we're getting more disasters. In fact, I got an article here I'll share with you probably next week talking about disasters, of which this pandemic here is certainly going to be a disaster. Just like AIDS, that's a disaster in the making. It's unfolding before your eyeballs if you take a look at the numbers worldwide. It's scary. I'm not really concerned about it. I take silver. Silver kills viruses. Is it the magic panacea? No, God will kill me with a bacteria if I don't practice his law. But there's a solution to this problem. When you get sick, boys and girls, it's because you broke a law. You can't get sick without breaking the law first. And people that are getting sick and running around over here worried about, oh my God, have I got enough Tamiflu and have I got my vaccines? Those are criminals running around over here, and they're scared, and they ought to be scared. That'd be scary. I call them pig-eating Christians. Pig-eating Christians. And because they eat this bad diet of unclean meat, fat, blood, etc., they have toxins in their bodies coming out the yahoo. And in the final analysis, when any pathogen comes along, it strikes them and they get sick and they die. That's what the bottom line is. Now, if you'd stop doing that, you wouldn't have to be concerned about it. But I'm not a dietitian. I'm not here as a religious guy or a preacher telling you, hey, give this up. But there's a cause and effect relationship that you ought to be alerted to, that you ought to be aware of. Pay attention. I've often likened it to a sign on the highway that says slow to 35. Hell, you all know that you can go around that curve at 45. And hell, if you were driving a Porsche or a 280Z, hell, you might even do it at 55. But you know, even a Porsche, even a 280Z, even a sports car, a race car, there's a limit to how fast you can go around that turn. Even at the Indianapolis 500, the laws of physics work on all those cars as they go around those turns. They have to slow down when they get to the turns. Down the straightaways, they go 200 miles an hour. When they get to the turns, they slow down to 150. When you see the sign that says slow to 35, if you just slow to 35, drive around the curb, look out the window and enjoy the scenery, everything's going to go fine. When you go around at 45, you better be a little bit more alert. If you're going to take the curve at 55, you better keep your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel and pay attention to what you're doing. When you get beyond 55, 60, 65, or 70, you know, grab your ass and hang on tight. You may not be coming out of this one alive. Now, people live their lives like there's no tomorrow. Then all of a sudden, when these disease epidemics come along, they get real religious and real fast. And they call it here, remember in this article here, they call it nature. Nature's storehouse. Now, such absolute uncertainty coupled with the profound potential danger is disturbing for those whose job it is to ensure the health of their community, their nation, and broader humanity. Now, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, in a normal flu season, about 200,000 Americans are hospitalized. 38,000 die from the disease, with an overall mortality rate of 0.008% for those infected. So ordinary flu is way below 1%, 0.008. That's 8 per 1,000. Most of those deaths occur among older people, older than 65 on average. 98 of every 100,000 seniors with the flu dies. Influenza costs the United States economy about $12 billion a year in direct medical costs and loss of productivity. So just the ordinary, everyday, garden variety flu costs $12 billion. Yet this level of damage hardly approaches the catastrophe that the United States would face in a severe flu pandemic. Now, the CDC predicts that a medium-level epidemic could kill up to 200,000 Americans, hospitalize 750,000, and sicken about one-third of the U.S. population. Direct medical costs would top $166 billion, not including the cost of vaccination, an H5N1 avian influenza that is transmissible, or transmittable rather, from human to human, could be even more devastating. Assuming a mortality rate of 20% and 80 million illnesses, the United States could be looking at 16 million deaths and unimaginable economic costs. This extreme outcome is a worst-case scenario, and it assumes failure to produce an effective vaccine rapidly enough to make a difference in a virus that remains impervious to some anti-flu drugs. That 200,000 reckoning is clearly a conservative guess. I remember I mentioned to you last time, I think they're going to start the flu epidemic, and then they'll come along and they'll say, okay, now you need to be vaccinated. And then you'll go in there and get your vaccination, and that's the way they're going to give you the flu. I mean, boys and girls, this flu is live virus right in the vaccine. Now, that's the way they started that flu at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, back in 1917 among the soldiers. They actually gave those soldiers flu shots. You know, they said, hey, we got to immunize you against the flu. And the people that it killed were those in midlife, you know, young people, 20, 30-year-old soldiers in the Army. Then it spread to the whole population worldwide. Tuck that one away in your hearts, boys and girls. Next time, we'll take a look at the story, either next time or the time after, on this 1918 Spanish flu. I'll show you some of the statistics and the similarities between that flu and this one. And I think it's more than a coincidence here that they've gone out and dug up these bodies, and I reported to you last time here from Newsweek magazine. They've got that virus, that 1918 Spanish flu virus, in the laboratory today. They've reconstituted it. They dug it out of the ground and reinvigorated it. That's why I say I find it hard to believe that some lunatic at Fort Detrick, Maryland, hadn't thought that one up a long time ago, and they've already got that virus and have had it for 2, 3, 4 decades in the arsenal of biological weapons. And remember, these are the lunatics that say they want to reduce Earth's population. This is foreign affairs. These are the kind of people. These are the elitists here. And they write this for their members. I mean, they got thousands of members. There's millions of people believe in this program. And I don't have any quarrel with it. I mean, they're nice people, and they have an agenda, and they believe in evolution, and they believe that the world is overpopulated, and it needs to be reduced, and they're going to reduce it. They're out here busily working on it. The thing that bothers me is that disease is kind of indiscriminate. Back during the Middle Ages, when the bubonic plague was running around, the Jewish people were virtually unaffected by bubonic plague. And, of course, the Christians, God bless them, God love them, they blamed the Jews for the bubonic plague because the Jews didn't get it and the Christians did. Christians do that to this day, and they did then. Back in the Middle Ages, they blamed the Jews for the economic woes that the Christians suffered because the Christians borrowed money from the Jews and paid them interest. What I never could figure out is why you blame the banker for loaning you the money. Aren't you the guy that went in there and made the application for the loan? You know, when a woman gets knocked up, we always blame the woman. I have never heard anybody blame the man for this unwanted pregnancy. It's always the woman. It's her fault. Damn dumb women. She got knocked up. Well, boys and girls, it takes two to tango. So instead of blaming the Jews, why don't we think about, well, gee, what did we do to create bubonic plague? What did we do to create this economic problem? I'm not here defending usury and interest. It's a criminal activity. God told you not to participate in it. And the Jews ought not to lend you money at interest, and you ought not to borrow the money from the Jews at interest, or anybody else for that matter. But hell, you're the one that went out there and put that mortgage on your house. Now when you get into trouble and you can't make the payments, you blame the Jews. Now, the Jewish people don't eat unclean foods, and neither do the Muslims. They avoid pig, and I don't know about fat and blood. I assume that they do. They avoid fat and blood also. But they don't eat pig. They don't eat shellfish. They don't eat unclean meat. And their bodies are stronger. And you pig-eating Christians out there are going to get sick, and then you're going to blame these Muslims over here and call them terrorists and say, well, you Muslims over here are putting something in our water. You're doing something to poison us. No, you're doing it to yourself. Don't forget that. That's the bottom line. You're doing it to yourself. Now, the entire world is going to experience similar levels of viral carnage. In those areas ravaged by HIV, and home to millions of immunocompromised individuals, that's people whose immune systems don't work, might witness even greater death tolls. In response, some countries might impose useless but highly disruptive quarantines or close their borders and airports perhaps for months. Such closures would disrupt trade, travel, and productivity, and no doubt the world stock markets would teeter and perhaps fall precipitously. Aside from economics, the disease would likely directly affect global security, reducing troop strength and capacity for all armed forces, UN peacekeeping operations, and police worldwide. You ought to read some stories about these quarantines that were put up and the disruptions that it created during the Spanish flu here in the United States. People were running around with masks on their face as they walked around in public. And when people got sick, you know, then they would quarantine them. And that quarantine, you know, gets used kind of indiscriminately. Now, just picture this. You know, when the country gets really desperate, or maybe Canada gets really desperate. Hell, maybe China gets really desperate, and they shut down their airline, or they stop shipping stuff out of China to the United States, won't let Americans into China and so on to conduct business. I mean, you know, you can have some pretty serious, pretty consequential economic consequences that come out of it. Don't you think we ought to be prepared for it? Now, I'm not concerned about getting the flu. I can take care of that. But the economic consequences that are going to come out of this flu pandemic are going to be horrific. You're going to find it's going to be a hell of a lot worse than Hurricane Wilma hitting Miami and you're out of water for 3 days. You're going to be out of food, boys and girls. You better be thinking about having a little bit more than 72 hours on hand, maybe something like 3 or 4 years. Yeah, let me repeat that. You better be prepared for 3 or 4 years. Not 3 or 4 days or 3 or 4 weeks. Tuck it away in your heart. We'll talk more about it next time. I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it right there. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, politics, health, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. Gotta leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening. Good night, friends.